This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to New Books in Anthropology. I'm your host, Aliza Arıcan. Today, I'm joined by Vakas Bhatt, Assistant Professor of Anthropology at the University of Toronto, Scarborough. We will be talking about his book, Life Beyond Waste, Work and Infrastructure in Urban Pakistan, recently published by Stanford University Press. So thank you very much, Vakas, for joining us today.
No, thank you so much for having me. And very excited for the conversation.
Same here. So I thought we could begin by you telling us a little bit about yourself. And how did your background as an anthropologist lead you to write a book about waste work across Lahore?
Sure. So I think I could start with, you know, I've been connected, you know, I did anthropology as an undergraduate. That's from the ages of, 20 or so till now. So it's been, 18 years kind of doing anthropology. And I mean, I think part of it, and this will hopefully, I think, make sense in a little bit, was, the way that I came to anthropology was very much through kind of sort of a regional kind of focus, right? South Asia, but also sort of histories of coloniality and post-coloniality in the area, and also part of a larger kind of, post-colonial kind of concerns. And I think that sort of regional specificity, but also historical kind of specificity, really shaped my reasons for kind of coming into anthropology and doing anthropology. And so it was both a historical and kind of an intellectual kind of connection there. I think for a lot of people doing work in Pakistan, but also maybe, throughout the sort of the region of, of Pakistan, Afghanistan, all as well as the Middle East, I did my undergraduate degree from 2002 to 2006. So right after sort of 9/11, right? So this is very much the kind of war on terror moment. And obviously we're still, kind of the global war on terror is still with us. And so that very much shaped kind of the entrance into anthropology and thinking about doing research in Pakistan in the context of that, where, kind of questions of Islam, terrorism, post 9/11 really saturated Pakistan in many ways. And obviously sort of the drone strikes, that started a little bit later, I guess. And starting a PhD and trying to figure out a project that was always, even though that wasn't what I was researching necessarily, that always sort of hanged, cast a long shadow over the kinds of work that, I wanted to do. This might now become more about how I came to sort of waste work. We're looking at waste work. My initial sort of not the initial, my third PhD idea of project, which finally, you know, I did, you know, my grants, my proposals and all this kind of stuff, was looking at really at the sort of questions of sort of religious minorities in Pakistan and focusing in on sort of the Christian minorities in Lahore, and thinking about issues of religion, but also sort of law and the state, and sort of questions of secularism and public religion and these kinds of questions. And, you know, I did a proposal, I got a Werner grant, I got all the things. And, you know, I started my long-term fieldwork in 2014, January of 2014. And obviously I had gone, you know, gone before, and I'll kind of talk about my personal biography in a bit. And, you know, it was summer fieldwork. It was really focused in on Christian neighborhoods and spaces. And I went in 2010, 11, and 12. But then between those years, between 12 and 14, there were just sort of attacks, violent attacks against Christian communities in Pakistan. And that really shifted, I think, my own ideas of what I should, how I should be doing research, but also kind of questions of access and sort of discomfort people were having around an anthropologist doing the kind of work that I wanted to be doing, especially one who was, you know, very much connected to, you know, not Pakistan, from coming from the outside very much. And so I was having a lot of difficulty those initial months in kind of getting fieldwork going a little bit. And my advisors suggested to me, and kind of questions of caste and Christianity was always, I was aware of it because there's a large scale conversion of Christians to Dalit groups, lower caste groups, to Christianity, you know, between the 1880s and 1930s, as well as after that too. So I knew about this connection between Christianity and caste, and it was very much, it was part of my research, but it necessarily wasn't kind of a central question necessarily. And I sort of just, shifted to working with sort of the sort of municipal sanitation workers who are, you know, pretty much entirely Christian in Lahore and in a lot of cities in the Punjab province of Pakistan. And so my reasons for shifting was more about just trying to find a different avenue into maybe kind of the questions that I was interested in. And it was at that time, you know, I spent, you know, probably 6 months doing field work in this way, you know, working really closely with sort of municipal sanitation workers, accompanying them, getting to know them, this kind of stuff. And, you know, the sort of, it slowly started to shift to looking at waste work itself, and moving away from those other questions of let's say religion or secularity, law, violence, and these kinds of questions. And so, you know, there was a kind of, some of this was a conscious process, right? I was, you know, working on it, but some of it was also, you know, trying to understand what was going on in fieldwork and what really was compelling me as a sort of researcher. And also trying to have a conversation with people in Pakistan who are interested on these sorts of questions, that seemed not just more relevant, but that like a conversation was starting to happen around certain issues. I mean, around urbanization and waste, around caste and these things that I think seemed more relevant and also intellectually more compelling and politically more compelling, right? You know, these questions of blasphemy are really important and people can research it. I have nothing against people doing this type of work, but it was sort of trying to be part of conversations and contribute to conversations and start conversations that I think really did kind of compel me. And I think part of this had to do with, you know, being sort of a diasporic Pakistani as well, kind of recognizing that, you know, I am coming from the outside, not trying to, you know, how can I say this, kind of use my familial connections to then sort of be able to speak in a place of authority, and being very kind of aware of that and trying not to you know, use my identity to then sort of be able to claim authority, right? And sort of recognizing that, you know, I am coming from the outside and I have a lot to learn from kind of people in Pakistan working on the ground, you know, politically, intellectually, academics, these kinds of things. And that sort of diasporic position was also interesting because it did foreground questions of caste in a way that I caste is something in Pakistan that everyone's aware of, but there's not a kind of developed, let's say, language around it in the way that you see, you know, in India or something because of its sort of legal status and political status and this kind of stuff. And so part of the process for me was also, and for others I was in conversation with, of like, what is the language around caste within social life, but also within the sort of legal and political category. And so, you know, thinking about, you know, the sort of ways in which something like certain caste groups have certain capital that then allows them to sort of transform that caste into a sort of other forms of capital, right? And understanding my own family history within that and how, you know, I come from a sort of dominant caste group, you know, and that enables a certain type of migration or something like that, right? I mean, these are or access to land and these kinds of things, right? And that's very much, learning about that was also like an intellectual exercise in understanding caste itself within Pakistan because of its, you know, these relationships between landedness and access to state resources and education and these kinds of things, which is something, you know, my family has historically enjoyed, right? And a lot of dominant caste groups in Pakistan do. So I think, you know, going through this was, you know, it's a long process. As I said, it's been, you know, 18 to 20 years. But, you know, it is both, you know, a personally like important kind of story, but also like as an intellectual political kind of question. And I think it has been, you know, extremely productive for me, but also I think for, you know, the work and how hopefully my work is circulating and being read by people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For the reader, it really comes across as well. And it's very helpful to know how, you know, the personal and political and intellectual came together in this work. So I want to jump in the crux of the book in my reading. So Life Beyond Waste urges us to think about worlds of waste and forms of life, which are both very rich terms that you use, and you urge us to think about them alongside each other. So can you speak to what these terms signify for you, and what is at stake in understanding worlds of waste and forms of life together?
Of course. Yeah. I think, you know, the question of waste and life as sort of two things that, you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, quite often you can easily oppose these things, right? Sort of waste as, you know, the diminishment of life or less life or something along those lines or something exhausted of vitality. And you can think of life as something that's generative, productive, that produces, you know, waste in its actual, like, sort of thinking about sort of the questions of metabolism, right? So sort of metabolic processes that essentially result in some kind of waste. So there's that aspect of it. But I think also there's a kind of, you know, as I was sort of thinking about the book and writing it and working on it, I came to the language of, I decided upon, you know, this sort of world of waste and forms of life, I think kind of later on in the writing process. And I think those two terms, like not the waste and life part, but the worlds and forms part, were important for me and for a few reasons. And I think, you know, I think, you know, with, you know, waste is embedded in worlds. I mean, I think that was the kind of realization that I had, is that once you, and people have talked about this in other ways, that, you know, waste is a social and political relationship. It's about sort of, you know, the Mary Douglas kind of thing about social orders and what's included and excluded and these kinds of things. And so it's kind of building within that, but thinking about, you know, when we write about waste, we're writing about the worlds of waste, right? I mean, you know, I think people who write about waste itself is important, but I, you know, if I'm writing about waste, then I'm a waste management guy, right? I mean, there's a difference between a kind of a person who studies waste and a person who is kind of interested in waste as a, let's say, historical anthropological kind of concern. And so, you know, this question of the worlds of waste, and, you know, we can have, I'm not care too much if it's a world or multiple worlds and these kinds of things, like, that's, you know, I don't really work within that kind of intellectual space. And so, but I do think, you know, when we start tracing a waste in its materiality and its sociality, kind of a world opens up to us, right? And that world, those worlds are historical in nature, and we kind of have to think about what's being articulated, right, in those worlds. Like, it's, you know, in that sense, there are multiple worlds in the sense that, you know, a world of waste will look different in different places and at different times, right? And so it then becomes a kind of, once again, an intellectual and a political kind of question and concern of, you know, what do we write about? You know, so I could have easily written about worlds of waste in a very different way in this book, right? I could have, you know, talked about it as a very sort of technocratic kind of concern, right? And thinking about, yeah, sort of technopolitics, right? I could have used that as my orienting frame, right? I could have talked about very much, I don't use the language of entanglement too much, I do use it, but I could have talked about that as well, right? But because of kind of, yeah, because of the fieldwork, because of the conversations that I wanted to be part of, but also to push forward, you know, really foregrounding something like caste, right, within this world, right? I think that was, you know, a politically and ethically important kind of thing, and also finding a language to talk about that caste in a way that is, I feel, anyway, I can come back to that later, but that's one kind of part of it. And then the forms of life, the forms part of it, I found important. And, you know, obviously I'm working a lot here through kind of, you know, Agamben's kind of writings on forms of life, and thinking about the sort of, you know, Agamben, I think at some point he has this really nice sort of, I think it's almost in a footnote at some point on Bataille, and talking about how Bataille thinks about the abjection as sort of this weird thing of, you know, sort of abjection as a socially constructed thing, right? So, you know, why working classes are seen as abject, right, through some sort of bourgeois imaginary, right? But then abjection is also this sort of material kind of thing, right, this sort of naturalized kind of aspect. And Agamben sort of critiques Bataille within it, saying, you know, this is kind of an impoverished understanding of what forms of life really are, which is kind of about not forms in the sense of like socially recognizable forms, but the sort of singularity maybe, right, of a life, right? And in that sense, what's its potentiality? And then life itself has some sort of excess, right? And for me, you know, I found Agamben's discussion really rich, as well as, you know, the writings of Vina Das on this sort of, she, you know, works very much through Wittgenstein in a sort of slightly separate intellectual kind of thing. But it allowed me to kind of think of life as something that's happens, you know, beyond sort of the kind of social level, even beyond the sort of materiality of things. And then, you know, what constitutes a life are these sorts of, you know, all these processes unfolding, you know, at different scales. And so I was really intrigued by that kind of discussion around forms of life that, like, you know, and it's in the chapter, chapter four on waste and disease, but definitely in chapter five, where I talk about, you know, the possibility of reproduction and looking at how people, you know, have come to exist on the urban peripheries in Pakistan, right? And what it really entails, right, to kind of constitute a life, right, across generations, right? And I think that kind of question of the forms of life and the worlds of waste, I think that was, you know, so it's not just this sort of entanglement between waste and life. Obviously, there is that kind of aspect, but there's this sort of ways in which they come together, you know, they're highly contingent in nature, they're contingent. And in that sense, they require us to kind of like be reflexive about this process of writing about these worlds and these lives, right? And there's a kind of degree of, thinking about how do you narrate these worlds and lives. And I think in the coda, I kind of explicitly reflect on that kind of question. I'll stop there.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you know, you're not just showing that they're entangled, but what happens when they are. And one of the axes of the books, a long cast, was a part where this really comes across in my reading. So particularly, you show us that waste work does not start with the disposal of materials, but they really productive of and produced by long histories of caste, for example. So I'm curious about what this long durée approach shows us about the relationship between caste, waste, and work.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And I think, I think it's important for both people, like the sort of long durée kind of question is important for people working on caste and waste, but also maybe on questions of work and reproduction too, right? And so, you know, you have to, I mean, I think one aspect of the kind of question you're asking about waste, caste, and work as having a long durée is, you know, that these categories are highly unstable, right? That there's something that allows them, that instability is something that allows them to sort of transform across time and space, you know, and for a variety of reasons, but they also maintain like a certain identity, right? And they maintain that identity such that we can then have a conversation of the long durée, right? And so I think, and it's most explicit with caste because, you know, I think within the writings on caste, both sort of more social scientific writings, but also writings coming from, you know, Dalit writers themselves, you know, their caste is sort of defined by this ability for it to endure through its transformation, right? So to say that caste is the same thing it was is now as it was 100 years ago, is 300 years ago, it diminishes its political sort of salience, right? Because of, you know, that it has this ability to endure in ways that we don't even expect it to, right? And it even through its erasure, right, it sort of allows for it to operate, right? And so in that sense, you know, I think the long durée question is relevant to kind of trace, you know, the moments in which it sort of starts to transform, right, or how it endures, right, and through its transformation. I think I try to do that. And the kind of question of the production of waste and the long durée, you know, I think part of that had to do with a few things. I mean, I think one, it had to do with writings about waste that, you know, clearly, you know, more recently, there's been a lot more work on waste and, you know, very good work. I mean, work of, you know, there's so many people, Joshua Reno's work, Jacob Doherty had a book recently, it was really good. You know, that's within anthropology and then larger sort of conversations on waste. And, you know, I've found that extremely productive and helpful, and I work through a lot of those writings. And, you know, I think there all this work is very aware of the sort of historicity of waste or the historical contingency of waste. But there was a kind of problem that I was facing, I think, when I was doing my fieldwork, but also writing, of how do you take this work and foreground questions of sort of coloniality or post-colonial, you know, insights from post-colonial studies and these kinds of things. And I think part of my, I don't know, part of the exercise that I had to do to get through this is like, you know, and I think it comes out in chapter one, where I talk about very much the colonial sort of organization of waste work, right? And the question of something like the public, right? This sort of category of the public and how it sort of, you know, it helps to organize, you know, a particular order, a colonial order of things, right? Around waste, around labor, around exchange, around space, right? And the relationships between people. And I think that sort of long durée kind of production of waste that's what I was working out in that chapter. And I had to go to a different, scholarship to do that, right? Like I could not rely upon work, you know, solely from let's say, writings on waste or something like that, right? Or anthropological writing, right? And I think that kind of that chapter allowed to kind of see how these categories of waste, of labor, of caste, and sort of other categories like the public, right? You know, have, you know, these are very much embedded in some sort of colonial regime, but they also have proliferated in ways that are not expected, right? And the sort of chapter on, I think, the informal sector, which is chapter three and chapter two, but generally sort of, you know, I think those kinds of things look at how, you know, waste, the production of waste changes as sort of a material, social, and political kind of process, right? And how, you know, something like, you know, the proliferation of plastic, right, then creates a market which intersects with sort of caste relationships in ways that are unexpected. People enter into this work, you know, from, let's say, more privileged caste backgrounds, you know, but the work that they do is different than, you know, maybe a lower caste worker would be doing. The kinds of distancing that then is necessary to, you know, socially differentiate, you know, yourself from another person. And those are the kinds of, I think, you know, those are the kinds of, let's say, analysis or attention to the specificity that I think really does allow us to kind of understand this sort of, you know, both the sort of instability and identity of these categories of something like waste, caste, work, these kinds of things.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned intimacies a little bit, and the chapter on waste intimacies was my personal favorite. So I'll use my privileges as host and ask you about that. So you show us that waste produces and reproduces multiple forms of intimacy, but in uneven ways across the city. So can you tell us about how different kinds of waste intimacies sit with or relate to one another?
Yeah, I think that's a very, it was a question that I think it was hard for me to kind of understand, and not the question itself, but the sort of issue of intimacy, because it was something that, so the question of intimacy, I think, was something that came much later in my writing, actually. It was something that I don't know even if how much I was attuned to these questions of intimacy while I was doing my fieldwork. And I think that had to do with during the field research and the sort of dissertation writing, I was very, the way which I thought about intimacy was really through the kind of question of this sort of materiality, right? Of the sort of, you know, waste materials themselves, but also the materiality of the labor, right? The kinds of labors it is involved in this. And then relatedly to that, this kind of question of stigmatization, right? That this labor in the sort of context of Pakistan and South Asia is a very stigmatizing form of labor because of the sort of caste question. And so I was always like kind of thinking about the relationship between persons and the relationship between persons and things as a materiality stigmatization kind of question. And then I, the vignette that I opened that chapter with of like going into the home, you know, that was a vignette that was like in the dissertation. It was sort of, you know, like a lot of dissertations, it was like a random vignette in the middle of a chapter and really not knowing what to do with it. And I even, you know, after the dissertation process and everything, I was like, you know, I knew that I wanted to return to that vignette and really kind of understand what was going on there. And that kind of going into the home with the waste workers and, you know, going through a very, it's inside the home, it's intimate, but it's a very kind of marked out space of the home, right? And there's not, the freedom to move through the home. You know, it's very circumscribed where the workers and I could and could not go. And so in that kind of sense, the question of intimacy was obvious, but it also didn't seem, you know, insufficient. And I think what you're saying that, you know, these sorts of intimacy is something that's distributed across, unevenly across the urban landscape. I think, you know, that's really where I ended up in that chapter. It was only when I could do that, when I understood that, or I came to sort of really foreground that it's not that the home is, you know, fundamentally more intimate than the street or the market or something like that. But there's, you know, these intimacies between people and things and people through things, right, is something that happens. It's kind of constitutive of the relations of the market, right? That intimacy is part of market activity, right? And, you know, or, you know, intimacy is obviously, you know, formative of the relationship between workers and the households from which they collect waste, right? But it's also essential to, you know, the collection of waste from a shopping mall, right? Or something like that. And so I think that's sort of, you know, trying to play that out, but then also, and I think in that chapter, I think I see in that, in the chapter, and generally I approach intimacy as, you know, a sort of social intimacy, or intimacy as a relationship between persons. But I think in some of that chapter, I start to gesture to, and even in the chapter after that, that how a relationship that the self has to the self is also, you know, happening, right? And is part of that kind of how intimacies are distributed across the urban landscape and how one relates to one's own body and what this work. And so, you know, I don't necessarily fully describe, for example, how a middle-class person thinks about themselves in relationship to their waste. But that itself is an intimacy, right, that one has to oneself, right, through these material things. But in that chapter, you know, where I talk about one of the waste workers talking about, you know, how he says something along the lines, you know, we've worked around waste for so long, we've become germs ourselves, right? And so I think that kind of, you know, comment, which was, you know, a bit dramatic in a certain sense. I don't think he actually thinks of himself as a germ, but that kind of self-description kind of says something about how these intimacies are being distributed through the waste and the work surrounding it. I think part of this question is, you know, that intimacy, you know, from its very beginning is kind of, is fraught by antagonism and kind of interdependencies, right? I've said this in other sort of contexts or with you know, friends and colleagues and this kind of stuff. And there is a degree of, you know, I think there's still a sense of that intimacy and love and these things are somehow prior to kind of some sort of inequality or some unevenness or some sort of, you know, a relationship between people that is, you know, marked by an inequality or something like that. And so, you know, I just think the kind of, to think about the intimacy, there's a kind of, we have to actually foreground the kind of things that stand prior to intimacy, which are social relations, right? And those social relations, by the nature of that they're historical in nature, you know, are embedded in various kinds of uneven social relations, right? So I think, I mean, I can't say that there's no intimacy in the world that isn't marked by inequality or something like that. But I think in how I approached in intimacy, I wanted to make it clear that, you know, this, the conditions of possibility for this intimacy are those social relations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very glad you brought up the body and how it impacts how you thought about this. So for me, as I was reading the book, something that stayed with me was your hands. And that might sound weird, but you know, you continually reflect on like how you engaged in the space work yourself and how it changed your hands and how it feels and how it looks. And on the one hand, I'm curious about what the role of the body was in your methodology. And on the other hand, I saw your hands as maybe a vessel through which you were reflecting on your relationship with waste. So I'm also curious about whether this methodology created some waste reflexivities on your end.
Yeah, no, that's really, something that I think I had been thinking about a lot during my fieldwork and just the whole process as I've written more about everything. And I think, you know, I think I struggled a lot around writing about and through the body. I mean, I think that's sort of the methodological question. I think there was two ways I could think about it. Is one is I'm writing about bodies, right? But then to write through bodies, my own and, you know, the bodies of others, you know, I sort of thought about a lot throughout, throughout the years. And I think part of it, and this question of the body is the kind of like, the political stakes of writing about a stigmatizing kind of labor, especially in the context of like intense caste violence. And, you know, and this has to do with sort of the, you know, questions of positionality as sort of an upper caste diasporic Pakistani to write about, you know, low caste Dalit groups laboring in very stigmatizing labor, lives very much marked by poverty, and these kinds of things. And then to write about it in a way, even if writing about it well, right, like still aestheticizing, there's a degree of aestheticization, you know, in all writing, but definitely in writing around the body and bodies laboring and sort of the ways in which, you know, working class bodies and caste, the bodies of low caste groups are, you know, are, exoticized isn't the right word, but fetishized in some ways, in Pakistan, and not wanting to, you know, and poverty itself is sort of aestheticized and really struggle, not wanting to do that. Right. And so I think, I could have like wrote a lot more about the body or about bodies, right? In the way of, you know, ethnographic description or, you know, how that enters into, you know, my own sort of analysis. And this also relates to kind of the reproduction kind of problem, if, you know, about the sort of framework of reproduction, but we can come, you know, talk about that later. You know, it's sort of, I think the corporeality of the labor, right, is important. And it's also kind of something that, you know, about what not to write about or being reflective about how to write about certain things. And I think that was something that I really wanted to sort of think about and do. And I think you know, the writing about my, that the vignette that I think you're talking about sort of me having to lift up the waist with someone else, right? And then just being preoccupied. You know, I think, so early on, I just made a decision that I wasn't going to do participant observation. I wasn't going to be a sort of waist worker myself, right? That had to do with, yeah, just the discomfort that I felt as a sort of diasporic upper caste person from upper caste background, and, you know, being like, oh, this is fun. I'm going to go work with these people. Like, so I just, but I just, I didn't feel comfortable with that. And that's, that was a personal kind of decision on my part. And, you know, but, you know, as I worked in, worked with sort of, for example, junkyard owners, and it was also just a way of passing the time. So I would sometimes help sort stuff. And, you know, there were moments where I was doing the sorting and, you know, medical needles would be in the pile of waste, right? And, you know, that's when I did that a couple of times. I was like, okay, I can't do this. Like, this is just not a safe kind of labor and all, you know, these kinds of things. And so I think there was a lot of navigation on my end. And I think in that vignette, the reason that I included the vignette was to kind of think about, how can I say this? Like, you know, what's at stake in engaging in this labor, right? And I think that's something that I, like, it is about the physicality of it and these kinds of things, but my ability to withdraw from that labor so seamlessly, right, talks about that. That, I think, emphasizes how this labor is very bodily, and bodily is important, but there's this other aspect of it that's, let's say, more social or more political, right, that allows one to enter in, allows me to enter in and leave in a certain way that others who engage in this labor can't, right? And so when I, you know, talked about that kind of like I'm preoccupied with it, with my hands because I left, right? I don't know if the same kind of preoccupation, and I don't know, I mean, this is an open question, but I don't know if the same kind of preoccupation with the state of one's hands being dirty, right, would impact a waste worker, right? And what engages them, what preoccupies them is, you know, other stuff I describe in that chapter, right? So like building a home, gaining access to land, thinking about the medical care that's required, like these kinds of things, right? And so, you know, I think that's where I was like thinking about, you know, the difference about writing about bodies and writing through bodies is just a two different types of kind of ways of thinking about what, you know, this like form of labor that's highly corporeal and highly stigmatizing. You know, it goes back to that question of, you know, what worlds open up to us, right? And that's sort of how I, you know, have engaged with this question of the body. But it was something that I still don't feel fully kind of satisfied with on some level. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of where I've ended up on it, at mm-hmm. least.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing this with us. And you know, another part of the book that drew my attention methodologically was your discussion of who was not included, right? So can you speak to how you grappled with who not to follow or who not to write about?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think the you know, I think, yeah, I mean, there is a sort of, what's the term again? The ethnographic refusal kind of thing, right? And which, you know, I think is there, and it's something that I have you know, I think we've all, you know, people who have come, you know, been trained in many years or the, you know, whatever, more recently, you know, I think we do this much more, we're constantly doing this, right? I think, you know, that kind of previous idea of, you know, ethnographic refusal is like a moment in which you do something or you kind of whatever. And I think that's, you know, I think because of the reflexivity that, I mean, I hope, hopefully we all kind of enjoy and engage in constantly, you know, it is something that's prior to research, it's during research, it's in the process of writing and all these kinds of things. And so, I mean, one of the main ones, and I talk about this in the book quite early on, is sort of not being able to and not even pursuing further, let's say, research with waste workers who are sort of coming from Afghanistan and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, who are still very much a dominant part of the waste kind of sector in throughout Pakistan, but definitely in Lahore, and that having to do with, you know, them, you know, being surveilled by, you know, the Pakistani army and police and these kinds of things. And, you know, right after I finished my long-term field work, you know, there was a kind of, you know, especially sort of, workers who were, you know, came to Pakistan after the sort of Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, but also, you know, after the sort of American invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, you know, a lot of these people who have been settled in Lahore for, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 years, you know, immediately having their sort of identity cards disabled by the Pakistani state in 2016, right? And sort of a very strong anti-Pashtun kind of strand in Pakistani politics, and you know, it was one of these things where I, you know, by the nature of my fieldwork, I would meet people and sort of, you know, they had these workers, the Pashtun workers would have very close relationships with municipal sanitation workers and informal workers, and I could have, you know, I could have eventually continued to do it and build the relationships and, you know, do that, but you know, the first few times I met people, there was just a degree of suspicion and distrust and these things. And I didn't include them, but not because I don't think their lives aren't valuable or it doesn't, it was more a kind of, you know, is it, I'm still like not clear about the language, but, you know, is it necessary for me to do this for my work? And I just thought it wasn't the kind of possibilities of undue attention, of further suspicion, just of discomfort. I just did not want to sort of even enter into that space a little bit. And so just, you know, always remaining a bit distant in that sense. And you know, in that sense, I think, you know, my account isn't complete, right? And it's not perfect or something like that, right? And that's like that's fine by me as well. And so, but then there's also kind of larger, a related kind of question about how, you know, there's, you know, whenever you're doing ethnographic field work, you just have so much stuff thrown at you, right? And it always becomes a kind of question of, you know, what to include, what do you, not that what you deem valuable, but what, how do you end up including things and not including other things, right? And so part of it was also, even with kind of people who I was doing field work with, not including certain things because, I mean, sometimes it's not relevant, but sometimes it's also, it kind of... would lead to certain questions that I don't necessarily think were ones that I was invested in pursuing, right? And also limited access. I mean, I think the fieldwork I did was very much with men in Pakistan. The access, the relationship with women were, you know, was not completely absent, was limited. Once again, I think that limitation isn't a mark of failure necessarily or incompleteness, but it's more a limit to then, a limit that then allows you to reflect on certain things, right? I think the most important kind or most significant, and that's where I say, I think in maybe the acknowledgments or somewhere, I'm still writing about those worlds and lives, even if they're not... like they weren't my research interlocutors, right? There's still something about what I'm describing, which is directly built on those like lives in those worlds, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for sharing this with us. And my last question is directed towards the future. So what is next for you? What are some new questions, research projects, or courses that you're working on right now?
Yeah, no, I think, well, what's next for me right now is to sort of take a break after getting booked on and everything like that. But no, I was in Pakistan this past, last year from July till December, and I'll be going there just in a month or so as well. And, I think I was going back after, you know, not being able to go because of COVID and all these sorts of things. I was really excited. You know, it's a different stage in the process of, you know, you're done with the PhD and, you know, you're doing a new kind of work and you have other kind of personal and professional commitments that like make 2 years of fieldwork not possible, you know, these kinds of things. And so I think I've been sort of trying to, you know, obviously last year, especially, but more and more, sort of the impact that, you know, climate change is having on Pakistan. And, you know, last year, I'm sure you're aware of, you know, the floods that happened in certain parts of the country. And so that's something that sort of was not on my mind, was on my mind before of doing something on climate, the fact that climate change is having on sort of various parts of Pakistan, and then these floods happening, but also not wanting to do, yeah, chase disaster research. That's not what I'm interested in at all. But, you know, I'm thinking of a sort of multi-sided research project looking at the effects of climate change on Pakistan that sort of links across the kind of urban agrarian kind of landscape, and looking at different couple of regions, and yeah, looking at questions of, you know, I mean, in a sense, less about, I mean, climate is obviously part of it, but looking at sort of these kind of changing relationships between land and water, and like labor and livelihoods in these spaces, and you know, how this, you know, the region of Punjab has been kind of a site of intense infrastructural intervention around water and labor and agriculture. And now with climate change, how that sort of history of like intensive intervention is, I mean, the infrastructure has exacerbated a lot of this climate change impacts of climate change, but also looking at various kinds of, political movements that have for, you know, several decades now, but more recently been fighting against a lot of this sort of water infrastructure, so embedded in sort of the agrarian economy too, this sort of infrastructural water infrastructure, and looking at, you know, various kinds of movements from sort of, you know, very much kind of peasant movements to more sort of ethno-linguistic movements in sort of peripheries of Pakistan, to kind of understand the kind of political horizons that kind of are confronting us. And in that sense, you know, some of the questions I've been interested in around infrastructure and labor are still there, but now foregrounding, you know, kind of issues and ecological kind of concerns around water and land, and agriculture itself. The courses, I just taught a course on, it was an advanced undergraduate course that I taught on climate, which was quite fun, to try to, especially at a sort of advanced undergraduate level, to have the students think about how can you sort of do an sort of ethnography of climate, right? What is climate as sort of as an object of study? But then also thinking about, you know, the politics of climate change, but also like a political climate and sort of connecting these things of, you know, climactic change and sort of right wing kind of political movements and sort of a resurgent nationalism in many parts of the world, and these sorts of questions. So I think that was quite helpful. And, you know, I think thinking about something like, you know, in the class, you know, thinking about issues of justice and reparations within the, you know, as about climate, but also like climate as part of these other histories of racism and indigenous dispossession and colonialism too. So that class was quite exciting, and the undergraduates were, you know, quite, I didn't find it as uphill of a battle to sort of convince them of this, right? It seems like it's, you know, in the kind of milieu or the ether, right? It's kind of out there already. And so that class was quite fun to teach. And I'll be teaching, you know, a class that I'm really excited at some point about the future of work and thinking about work and its changing dynamics too, which is not necessarily part of my research, but I guess it is in the sense of, you know, in Pakistan and a lot of places, you know, that agricultural labor is, you know, seen as no longer, you know, a sustainable kind of labor for many people, right? And there's kind of that kind of, what is the future of agricultural work in a kind of context where climate and infrastructure and all these things are really making agrarian livelihoods much less sustainable for people, right? So I feel like that will be also kind of a course that it, you know, intersects with my future research in a kind of interesting way, I think.
Yeah, these all sound very fascinating, and your students are so lucky. I wish I could take these courses. So thank you very much, Vakas, for joining us and for your insights.
No, great. Thank you so much. And yeah, those are wonderful questions. And I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and speak with you and have people hear about the work and stuff. So thank you so much.
Of course, the pleasure is all mine. This is your host, Aliza Arıcan. This discussion of life beyond waste, work and infrastructure in urban Pakistan, published by Stanford University Press in 2022, is brought to you by the New Books Network. Thank you for listening.